This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Dirty hands means clean theology. Can you dig it?
What is going on, all my local guys and gals and long distance pals?
We're back.
Who has a good one?
All three of us.
We're back. All three of us are back.
That never happens. I feel like we've been so busy lately that the three of us have a hard time getting together. But you know what? Show must go on, but we keep doing what we can do to make some good content. You know, it releases
us just good conversations and bro time, man.
It always is that, for sure. And we all need that. But you know what releases tomorrow? I don't even know if I told you, Justin.
Mm-mm.
I actually did the sermon at church a couple weeks ago.
Yes, you told me that. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So I'm going to put that out. It's going to release at church or on the church feed on Sunday. He's going to put it out, but I put it out as the episode for tomorrow, which I'll cut this part out because it really doesn't make sense because this will be, you know, after that. But that goes out tomorrow, so we'll see how bad that flops. But what we always say
it
is
was really good.
We hope we reach one person. That's what we hope for. Right? Yeah, if we can reach one, it's worth it.
What was the message?
Message is about how you've seen God work in your life. Because a lot of people think they have, you know, you have your testimony, right? So some people say they've been a Christian their whole life. They haven't had struggles. They haven't had this. They haven't had that. Whatever. But in the end, God's worked in your life one way or another. And I'm really paraphrasing here, but God's worked in your life one way or another. And however he's worked in your life, whatever the toughest thing you've been through in your life is, whether it's the loss of a loved one, whether it's the, you know, you didn't have the ability to put food on your table for your family, whether it's, you know, you were addicted to something, or you were, you know, just a downright terrible person like I was when I was younger. Like, how did God help you through that? And then you take it a step further, and God worked us through all that. All of us are sitting here with different things that we've been through in our lives, and there's somebody out there going through that exact thing that we went through before. There's somebody else out there that's suffering with the same things you've suffered with in the past that God's helped you through. And the whole point is, God uses us not because he has to, but because he allows us to, right? He allows us to be part of that story. So I guess kind of the way to sum it up the best is, you know, it's the most amazing gift that we've ever had is God sending Jesus, you know, to save us. But the second most amazing thing is that he allows you to be part of someone's salvation story. And it's through your witness, through your testimony that you have and the things that God's helped you through in your life, and you can help that next person through it. And that's the whole point. It's not just... God's not just going to wave a magic wand while we sit idle. God uses us, so we got to step up and get out there and help those people. You know, share your testimony.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Yeah, because a lot of people got the mindset of, you know, what can I do? You know, I can't make a difference. And
you can.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll tell you that it's tough, and it's a very hard thing. I get, I'll be very honest, and I was very honest during that sermon. I was very vulnerable, but that's what telling your testimony is you're telling something that was hard for you. something that was difficult, something that you are not proud of. And people a lot of times will look at people who go to church and they'll be like, oh, they're this perfect Christian. They got it figured out. That is not true. Not a single one of us do. Not a single one of us have it figured out. We still screw up. We still struggle. We still go through these things. But that's the whole point, right? That's the whole point, is that we're always growing. We're always moving forward. But how can we help our fellow man? How can we help the church grow? And how can we reach out and strengthen the people who are already believers? If you look through the New Testament, Paul all the time is not just going to make new believers. He's going and he's strengthening the churches that are already there. I'll let you listen in and see what you think. Just say something nice and keep your thoughts to yourself.
I always have nice things to say about you, Stephen.
Like I said, say something keep your thoughts to yourself.
He looks really good without any hair on top of his head.
I'm cut real short today. I think she cut me a couple days ago. But anyway, also the things on the documentary stuff are floating forward. We're going in the right direction. We have a plan. We have a focus. We're working towards a couple things that it's going to be something totally different that no one's... It's not going to be your run-of-the-mill creation evolution documentary. It's going to be something that can capture people that even if you don't believe, that it could be entertaining. So at least we can give you a taste, maybe plant a seed to somebody who wouldn't watch just one of these regular, and I hate to say regular, but these creation evolution documentaries that are so great information, but so dry.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a believer, yeah, you can listen to it and say, yeah, it's awesome. I like that information. But if you're not, you're going to be like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to bring it in a different light, and it's really going to be cool. Get excited for that.
We're continuing our Genesis. And when I got to looking at the chapters we're going to cover today, I kind of perked up a little bit, guys.
It may have something to do with that sign over Ben's right shoulder. I don't know.
Yeah, man. And this book I found by this really cool, handsome author. He's so smart, too.
I think I've heard
the audio Epic of Esau.
Well, you guys ready to jump in? Ben, I know you're gonna say yes.
Let's go.
Ben has been ready. That's why he's been so quiet. He's been taking all these notes and stuff, nipping at the bit, ready to go.
Yep. I've been ready my whole life.
Well, definitely been your whole life.
That's exactly.
All right. All right, let me clear my throat. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Sorry. Yeah.
Do so re mi fa so la di do.
All right, chapter 24. Abraham was now a very old man, and the Lord had blessed him in every way. One day, Abraham said to his oldest servant, the man in charge of his household, take an oath by putting your hand under my thigh. Swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and earth, that you will not allow my son to marry one of these local Canaanite women. Go instead to my homeland, to my relatives, and find a wife for my son Isaac. The servant said, but what if I can't find a young woman who is willing to travel so far from home? Should I then take Isaac there to live among your relatives in the land where you came from? No, Abraham responded. Be careful never to take my son there. For the Lord God of heaven, who took me from my father's house, my native land, solemnly promised to give this land to my descendants. He will send his angel ahead of you, and he will see it that you find a wife there for my son. If she is unwilling to come back with you, then you are free from this oath of mine, but under no circumstance are you allowed to take my son there. So the servant took an oath by putting his hand under the thigh of his master Abraham and swore to Abraham's instructions. Then he loaded 10 of Abraham's camels with all kinds of expensive gifts from his master and traveled to distant Aram Naharaim. There he went to a town where Abraham's brother Nahor had settled. He made the camels kneel beside the well outside of town. It was evening and the women were coming out to draw water. O Lord God of my master Abraham, he prayed, please give me success today and show unfailing love to my master Abraham. See, I am standing here beside this spring, and the women of the town are coming out to draw water. This is my request. I will ask one of them, please give me a drink from your jug. If she says yes, have a drink, and I will draw waters for your camels too. Let her be the one you have selected as Isaac's wife. This is how I will know that you have shown unfailing love to my master. Before he had finished praying, he saw a young woman named Rebecca coming out to with her water jug on her shoulder. She was the daughter of Bethuel, who was the son of Abraham's brother Nahor and his wife Milcah. Rebecca was very beautiful and old enough to be married, but she was still a virgin. She went down to the spring, filled her jug, and came up again. Running over to her, the servant said, "Please give me a little drink of water."
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Water from your jug. "Yes, my lord," she answered. "Have a drink." And she quickly lowered her jug from her shoulder and gave him a drink. When she had given him a drink, she said, "I will draw water for your camels too until they have had enough to drink." So she quickly emptied her jug into the watering trough and ran back to the well to draw water for all his camels. The servant watched her in silence, wondering whether or not the Lord had given him success in his mission. Then at last, when the camels had finished drinking, he took out a gold ring for her nose and two large gold bracelets for her wrist. "Whose daughter are you?" he asked. "Please tell me. Would your father have any room to put us up for the night?" "I am the daughter of Bethuel," she replied. "My grandparents are Nahor and Milcah. Yes, we have plenty of straw and feed for the camels, and we have room for guests." The man bowed low and worshiped the Lord. "Praise the Lord, the God of my master Abraham," he said. "The Lord has shown unfailing love and faithfulness to my master, for he has led me straight to my master's relatives." The young woman ran home to tell her family everything that had happened. Now Rebecca had a brother named Laban who ran out to meet the man at the spring. He had seen the nose ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrists and heard Rebecca tell what the man had said. So he rushed to the spring where the man was still standing beside the camels. Laban said to him, "Come and stay with us, you who are blessed by the Lord. Why are you standing here outside of the town when I have all this room ready for you and a place prepared for your camels?" So the man went home with Laban. And Laban unloaded the camels, gave him straw for the bedding, fed them, provided water for the man and the camels and the camel drivers to wash their feet. Then food was served. But Abraham's servant said, "I don't want to eat until I have told you why I have come." "All right," Laban said, "tell us." "I am Abraham's servant," he explained. "And the Lord greatly blessed my master. He has become a wealthy man. The Lord has given him flocks of sheep, goats, herds of cattle, a fortune in gold and silver, and many female and male servants, and many camels and donkeys. When Sarah, my master's wife, was very old, she gave birth to my master's son, and my master had given him everything he owns. And my master made me take an oath. He said, 'Don't allow my son to marry one of these local Canaanite women. Go instead to my father's house, to my relatives, and find a wife for my son.' But I said to my master, 'What if I can't find a young woman who is willing to come back with me?' He responded, 'The Lord, in whose presence I have lived, will send this his angel with you and make your mission successful. Yes, you must find a wife for my son among my relatives from my father's family. Then you will have fulfilled your obligation. But if you go to my relatives and they refuse to let her go with you, you will be free from my oath.' So today, when I came to the spring, I prayed this prayer, 'O Lord God, my master Abraham, please give me success on this mission. See, I am standing here beside the spring. This is my request. When a young woman comes to draw water, I will say to her, 'Please give me a drink of water from your jug.' If she says, 'Yes, have a drink,' And I will draw water for your camels too. Let her be the one you have selected to be the wife of my master's son. Before I had finished praying in my heart, I saw Rebecca coming out with her water jug on her shoulder. She went down to the spring and drew water. So I said to her, please give me a drink. She quickly lowered her jug from her shoulder and said, yes, have a drink, and I will water your camels too. So I drank, and then she watered the camels. Then I asked, whose daughter are you? She replied, I am the daughter of Bethuel, and my grandparents are Nahor and Milcah. So I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her wrist. Then I bowed low and worshiped the Lord. I praised the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, because he led me straight away to my master's niece to be his wife's son. So tell me, will you or won't you show unfailing love and faithfulness to my master? Please tell me yes or no, and then I'll know what to do next. Then Laban and Bethuel replied, the Lord has obviously brought you here, so there is nothing we can say. Here is Rebecca. Take her and go. Yes, let her be the wife of your master's son, the Lord, as the Lord has directed. When Abraham's servant heard their answer, he bowed low to the ground and worshiped the Lord. Then he brought out silver and gold jewelry and clothing and presented them to Rebecca. He also gave expensive presents to her brother and mother. Then they ate their meal, and the servant and the men with him stayed there overnight. But early the next morning, Abraham's servant said, send me back to my master. But we want Rebecca to stay with us at least 10 days, her brother and mother said. Then she can go. But he said, don't delay me. The Lord has made my mission successful. Now send me back so I can return to my master. Well, they said, we'll call Rebecca and ask her what she thinks. So they called Rebecca. Are you willing to go with this man? They asked her. She replied, yes, I will go. So they said goodbye to Rebecca and sent her away with Abraham's servant and his men. The woman who had been Rebecca's childhood nurse went along with her. They gave her this blessing as she parted. Our sister, may you become the mother of many millions. May your descendants be strong and conquer the cities of their enemies. Then Rebecca and her servant girls mounted the camels and followed the man. So Abraham's servant took Rebecca and went on his way. Meanwhile, Isaac, whose home was in the Negev, had returned from Beer Lahai Roy. One evening, as he was walking and meditating in the fields, he looked up and saw the camels coming. When Rebecca looked up and saw Isaac, she quickly dismounted from her camel. Who is that man walking through the fields to meet us? She said to the servant. And he replied, it is my master. So Rebecca covered her face with the veil. Then the servant told Isaac everything he had done. And Isaac brought Rebecca into his mother Sarah's tent, and she became his wife. And he loved her deeply, and she was a special comfort to him after the death of his mother. And that was a long chapter. Got to breathe for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in there as well. I know this isn't the next chapter, but there's a lot in this chapter. I think there's a couple things that are interesting. If you go into the beginning here, I always wondered this, so I had to look this up for this especially. But when it says that he places his thigh or his hand under his thigh as a solemn oath,
mm-hmm.
You know, I always thought that was just really weird. Why would you put your hand under his thigh?
That does sound weird. Yep.
So I looked this up, and there's a Jewish philosopher from the 12th century named Ibn Ezra. And what he says, and it's not the thigh, he says that you would place your genitals in his hand. And he said this was a practiced by many cultures. This guy's from the 12th century, Jewish philosopher, says that you would place your genitals in their hand. And I wonder if you think about it, to a man, and I know it may sounds funny, but you know, you don't have the Bible to swear on like an oath like we do now. You go to court, you swear in the Bible. Maybe it's the next most sacred thing is your fertility. Like, yeah, you're swearing on your fertility that this, like I'm putting my manhood in your hand. Like, I'm swearing on that. That is my fertility. So I'm giving this up if I'm lying to you. And I don't know if that's exactly the case, but he said it was very common that Ibn Ezra from the, like I said, 12th century said that was a common practice in multiple cultures to actually place the genitals in the hand as part of that oath.
Was it a mutual thing, or is it just the one promising hold the master's
Yes. So like if he's saying like I'm swearing this, then you're holding his.
Oh, right.
Right. So Abraham's one on saying, I'm swearing this. Like he'd say, put his hand on the Bible, say, I'm swearing this. But no, he's like, I'm going to put what's sacred to me, my fertility, my bloodline is in your hands.
Yeah.
I'm not recommending anybody still try this. This is one of those biblical things. It's okay that it's passed. It's done. It's okay. But I just think that that's kind of interesting because I've heard that. That's not the only place in the Bible it says that. It says that very frequently. You see that where it says put your hand under his thigh. And it's like kind of like
the euphemism of lay at the feet.
Yes.
You know, or to know.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's very much has to go back to the importance of fertility. Because if you look even later, Rebecca, right, she's not fertile again for quite some time. Or fertile at all for quite some time until Isaac actually goes to God and prays for that. But I don't know. I think that's something really interesting that I've never heard before. And
yeah, me neither.
Well,
yeah, that's, I was sitting there thinking when you were reading it, I was like, what is that? Too. What?
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Let me put my hand under your thigh and I'll swear to you. Let me put my finger in your ear.
Oh, gosh, swear. I'm glad it was ear. I was like, oh, no, don't, Ben. Don't.
In your belly button.
I think there's a couple things when we go a little further. I think it's interesting when you see the servant get to the well. Right, he's asked God to do this, and Rebecca's the first one that shows up. So God's answering the prayer right away. He doesn't realize it right away, but God also is like the master of suspense here, because he says, "Okay, if she says, yeah, I'll give you a drink, and then I'll water your camels," like she's the one. So she goes, "Yeah, I'll give you a drink." She lowers her jug. She lets him have a drink, and I'll water your camels. And God's like, "There it is." That was pretty cool. He still doesn't really know it until he realizes, yeah, that's Abraham's niece, right? Ultimately from Nahor. So he realizes, yeah, okay, this is the real thing. But just kind of cool how God did that. He like held him in a state of suspense for just a second. He's like, but here it is. And I don't know. I just think it's so cool the way that you see the way that God works and the way that he does those things. But one other thing going a little further is we see Laban, and it's kind of weird that you see. So first, the whole, I should say this, and I'm, you guys cut me off at whenever you want to, but the whole thing, when he goes to, the servant goes to get Rebecca, he kind of takes the place of Isaac to some degree. Cause you know, you don't send somebody to go get your wife. You go get your wife. It's almost like a betrothal ceremony, the whole way that takes place. So it's kind of interesting how he does it. So he's kind of an intermediary, you know, for Isaac in that way. So even when she comes back at the end, she puts the veil over her face. Cause you know, just like, with Jacob and Leah, right? The veil's on her face. That's why he doesn't realize it's her when he gets married. You don't know her. She wears that veil until the wedding night. He doesn't even realize it's not even the same person. So she puts that veil down at that point. But just interesting. It's almost that betrothal ceremony where you're right there. But Laban is kind of interesting right after that, because Laban, what's the first thing that Laban spots? Kind of gives us a little judgment of his character. He spots the gold nose ring and the gold bracelets, and he's like, oh, And we see what kind of person Laban is later on with Jacob. But this is the first hint to that Laban maybe doesn't always have everybody's best interest. Maybe he's a little selfish. Maybe he's a little greedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes through on that. So I don't know. That's just a few of the things I noticed in the very beginning of the chapter. You guys see something?
Well, I thought that when Laban came out, it was like, well, why is he coming instead of the father?
Yeah.
And in the notes of the ESV study Bible that I got, it says that the actions of Laban, Rebekah's brother, suggest that he has taken on the day-to-day responsibility of overseeing the family, while Laban's father, Bethuel, is still alive. His lack of involvement in the narrative suggests that he may well be incapacitated, possibly through old age. But I wonder, now that you said what you said, it was just like, no, money, 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 money. I'll go meet this guy. He might tip me for taking him back to the house.
And he know? Did.
And, yeah. and for unloading his camels for him. And
yep. Hmm. So you see that, I don't know. I just think that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see a little further down where I always thought it was kind of funny too. He's talking about, like, okay, let's take Rebekah back. Like, no, let her stay here for 10 days and she'll come after that. Okay. 10 days. Like, what's the point of 10 days? Like, is 10 days really that big a difference? Like, is it just, hey, I'm going to say goodbye to you. But if you go into the Hebrew, it's actually kind of interesting because the language that's used is a little bit, it can kind of be interpreted a couple ways. What is said to be 10 days actually can be interpreted as 10 months. So when you look at that, 10 months makes, that's a bigger difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we already know the kind of person Laban turns into. 7 years turns into 14 years just to get Rachel. So who knows? And this, maybe the servant has some insight from God. Like, I need to do this now. It needs to happen now. But the fact is that they could have been insinuating that they wanted her to stay 10 more months until a certain period of time. For some reason, I'm not sure why that number 10 was significant, but they wanted her to stay 10 more months until she went to be with Isaac. But the servant's like, nah, no. Nah. So
nope. He's coming. She's coming now.
Exactly.
And how they tell him not to take any wives from the Canaanites, you know, it goes back to the whole Noah and the uncovering of thy father's nakedness, you know, where Ham slept with his mother and impregnated her, and Canaan was the result. So Canaan was an incest baby, so therefore it was a cursed lineage. They weren't supposed to take part in interbreed and mix with those people. But one thing that really kind of stood out to me, and I talked about it in the book, was the first interaction between, you know, the servant and Bethuel, or however you say the name. But he said, oh yeah, I'm coming in the name of my master and his Lord, you know, the Lord Yahweh, because that's the Tetragrammaton in the original Hebrew. But he says, you know, to this, you know, God you speak of, I can speak neither good nor evil. So it kind of shows you that he didn't know who Yahweh was. So therefore, he obviously wasn't worshiping and serving Yahweh. He didn't even know who he was, because he said, this Yahweh you speak of, I can neither speak good nor evil.
No, it's still, they were very much still pagan at that time, as most of those areas were, you know, post Babel. We've talked about this a bunch of times, and this is where I think people get hung up on the Exodus. You know, when they get out and they go after these Canaanite clans and the Perizzites and the Jebusites and all these other giant clans, and God's telling them to wipe them out. We kind of, I think, miss the mark on that sometimes. Is if you go back, not that many generations, it was the Tower of Babel. At the Tower of Babel, everybody knew who God was. Everybody had come. They were one people, one language, one religion. They knew who God was. The language changed. and they went off. They all had the story. They all knew who Yahweh was, whether or not they called him Yahweh or whatever in their language, but their version of Yahweh, that the name that they held sacred, you know, Yahweh, they were saying it in a different language. But as you trickle down past that, we have the telephone game partly. We don't have written language right away and all these other languages, but these people knew the truth. And they still deviated from it, just like the Israelites throughout the entire Exodus deviate away from it. Yeah. And what has God have to do? He has to reprimand.
Because the fallen sons of God, you know, from Deuteronomy 32, they're ruling over the nations and influencing the people and accepting worship instead of overseeing them and helping them.
And that's the thing, too, is people have to understand how supernatural it was. Because you don't have Yahweh, and you see this, you know, a pillar of fire leading you at night, and a pillar of smoke during the day leading you, and you see these amazing manna comes from heaven, you know, all this amazing stuff, and then you're like, you know what, I kind of feel like sacrificing my kid to Molech today. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, Molech had to be able to do something. Molech had to show them something. There was something they were getting in return for going against God's word. So if you think that all these lowercase g gods that we talk about were just a name, they're just an idol, then you're making out the Israelites to be even dumber than you can even imagine, because it was a supernatural world and they knew it. They were seeing it on all sides. The Pharaoh's magicians could do the first three things that Moses did when he was trying to get the people freed from Egypt. They turned their snakes into their staves into serpents. They turned the Nile to blood. They've caused frogs to come up out of the river. They could do all those things. But then God keeps taking it the next step, showing you, well, anything you can do, I can do better. You know, just
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay, no insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
That kind of thing. So, but those lowercase g gods could do things, and that's why they fell away over and over and over again, because they saw something amazing. They didn't have the Holy Spirit either, which I think plays a big role too, but they saw amazing supernatural things all around them. And that's where even Nahor here and Bethuel, right? They had been exposed to the same things Abraham had been exposed to. God took Abraham aside, set him aside for a special purpose, but they all knew the stories. The stories had come down. They knew the truth of who Yahweh was. It's just they start branching in. And if you watch throughout the Exodus, Israelites be like, yeah, Yahweh's awesome, but why don't we bring in Chemosh too? Why don't we bring in, you know, Ashtaroth too? What, these little Asherah poles aren't that big a deal. We're just going to add it all. Why can't we worship everybody? Everything turns into a polytheistic society. And every time that God lets them go, polytheism happens. And what's one of the, you know, the first Ten Commandments? Mm-hmm. Thou shalt not have any other gods before you. And that's the first thing God writes up there. And what is he, by the time he gets down the hill, they already have a golden calf in front of him.
Yeah. And the second one, you know, lets you know that he's talking about real entities, not wood and stone, because he separates the two. The very next commandment is don't make idols. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for the people who want to say, oh, well, they're talking about gods, they're talking about, you know, idols of wood and stone. Well, no, obviously not, because God, you know, makes two separate rules and splits those two into two separate things.
Yeah, it's, and that's where once again we try to suppress the supernatural in our society, especially nowadays. I was listening to somebody the other day and I thought it was pretty interesting. I'm trying to remember who it was. Geez, who was it? I think it might have been Bo Kennedy, actually. I was listening to something from him and he said, if you think about it, you know, when it talks about someone being demon possessed, when a demon's cast out of somebody, right? It says in the Bible, if you know, you go back to what you're doing, that demon will come back with seven more of his buddies. It gets worse. Mm-hmm. If you're not truly repentant, you don't turn away from your ways, that demon becomes worse than it was before. Now, imagine if we take that on a global scale, say we take that on our national scale, and we say our country, which, you know, we say is founded on God, at least the freedom of religion. And, you know, when the pilgrims got here, it was the freedom to use the Geneva Bible and all these different things that we, you know, they were under, they were oppressed where they were, but we, our country founded on God. And then all of a sudden, everything you see is little pieces of God being pulled away from the rest of society. All of a sudden you look at our country and now we're like, well, we started going from God to now we're bringing an evolution. So, you know, we don't really need a God. Now we have, you know, atheists. Well, God's not really a real thing. It's just a construct. It's something in your mind. So, you know, it's just it's kind of like a psychological disorder to believe in God, you know, according to like an atheist.
Yeah. They make it out to where believing in God's kind of like, that's just what people did to make themselves feel better.
Yeah.
What the government does to control people.
But if you think about it, so now you take all that out of our society. You say the more you take God out, same thing as before. You had, you know, this one demon before working on you. Now it brings in seven times as much. Look at our country right now.
Yeah.
It is just exponentially getting worse in most places.
Babylon.
You could look at it as a new Babylon. There's absolutely no doubt because we are such a materialistic, such a society focused on what can you do for me and what's important to me on a very selfish, egocentric society. And once again, I'm not saying there aren't great people out there that say, oh, I want to help this person. I want to help this person. But when you look at, you know, God actually says without faith in him, there's no such thing as a good deed. He doesn't care what you do. You could sit there and give poor people all the money in the world you want, but without faith, God doesn't care. You still have to have faith in God. So when you look at this and you look at the degradation of our society and how we've gotten to the point, it goes back to that one quote, is the greatest trick the devil ever pulled is making the world think he didn't exist. And that right now is where the majority of, I think, our country is. And I'm talking about even about churchgoers, people that have, you know, that we sit there and we talk about as you know, this part of the church. Oh, but they are so brainwashed in a different way that if we don't go to our Bible, if we don't go into the Word ourselves, you're listening to one man, whether you're listening to the Pope, which please don't tell me you're doing that. But if you're listening to just even one pastor, and I even say this, I think we have the best pastor on the planet at our church. On the planet. And he's still a man. He's still fallible. Like, I shouldn't just listen to him. I need to go to the book myself. I need to go to the Word myself. And that's where we are so stuck as a society, is that we are so comfortable listening to somebody else tell us what to do.
Or we're lazy.
Well, we
don't want to read, don't want to search things out ourselves. It's just much easier to just sit back and have mommy have the spoon with the Gerber food in it. And here comes the airplane.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, listen, if you literally go back to the last Pope, he said all religions are path to heaven. That is the most anti-scriptural thing you could say. I mean, he literally, that was words he spoke. So you have to be really careful who you listen to. You know, the Pope's always been revered as far as the Christian, Roman Catholic Church, especially as someone who's supposed to be in line with the God, the best for the people. But the problem is when you give one person too much power, other than Jesus, it's going to go sideways. Our focus needs to be on Jesus, not on a person, not on the Pope, not on your pastor, not on your priest, not on your minister, not on your rabbi, not on whoever. It needs to be on Jesus. So, oh, I got to breathe for a minute. I'm sorry.
No, you're right, man.
But, all right. One other thing I saw at the end of this that I thought was pretty interesting, because I think there's some symbolism there. He said at the very end, it says, Isaac brought Rebekah into his mother Sarah's tent, and she became his wife. He loved her deeply, and she was a special comfort to him after the death of his mother. Now, it says she brings him into his mother's tent. I mean, that literally could have been, yes, like, this is the, you can have this tent now. Mom doesn't use it anymore. It could be that. But really, I think what he's saying is more of a metaphorical thing, saying she's the new matriarch of the Israelites. This is what's going to happen. Everything's going to come through her now. So that covenant that was with Sarah now is through Isaac and Rebekah. She's the new matriarch of Israel. So I think that probably is more of a metaphorical saying, more than just saying, hey, here's a tent, you can sleep here.
No, yeah. It could have been the consummation of the marriage, because it was one of those things that you weren't married to, it was consummated, and maybe they had to do that in front of their mother or parents to eyewitness, yes, it happened. You see that depicted in movies and stuff, like Kings and Queens and Game of Thrones and all that. It's like they want to be sure the deed happens. They want to, you know,
I guess
consummated.
If swearing an oath means somebody's holding your genitals, I guess anything can happen.
I guess me and Keisha ain't married yet.
Call up mom and dad.
Yeah, nope. I don't think so. It'd be easier for Steve. He just right out in the other house.
Yeah, across the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
you'll pass too.
We're gonna take Scout's honor.
Yeah.
I promise I did.
Well, you did got two boys, just like I do. So,
yeah, proof's in the pudding.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
You guys got anything else in 24?
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we?
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Jump into 25, and I honestly think we probably have enough in 25 to go another 6 hours. I see Justin's face lighting up. Ben will be asleep in the chair. Or he'll be working on that heavy bag behind him.
Yeah, buddies.
But why don't we jump?
It's fire. I've done peeled my jacket off.
I see that. Yeah. Do you see Skillet's coming again here with, it's like Jeremy Camp or something here in the next few months?
For what?
They're coming for a concert.
Winter Jam again?
No, it's a different concert. I can't remember. I saw it just a little bit ago. You should look it up.
Well, I've seen them three times, so I think
they're good.
Yeah, they're my favorite band.
Well, then see them four.
I'll see them 20 if I can.
There you go.
I'll see them 10 months worth.
Ooh, 10 days worth? Oh, you mean months?
Months. All right. Yeah. 40. All
70. 70 is 70. All of them. Okay, 40 is new beginnings.
Sorry, 70.
All right. chapter 25. Abraham married another wife whose name was Keturah. She gave birth to Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shusha. Jokshan was the father of Sheba and Dedan. Dedan's descendants were the Asherites, the Letushites, and the Lemuites. Midian's sons were Ephah, Epher, Hanok, Abida, and Elda. These were all the descendants of Abraham through Keturah. Abraham gave everything he owned to Isaac, his son. But before he died, he gave gifts to his sons of his concubines and sent them off to the land to the east, away from Isaac. Abraham lived for 175 years, and he died at the ripe old age, having lived a long, satisfying life. He breathed his last and joined his ancestors in death. His sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre, in the field of Ephron, son of Zohar the Hittite. This was the field Abraham had purchased from the Hittites, where he had buried his wife Sarah. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who settled near Beer Lahai Roy in the Negev. This is the account of the family of Ishmael, the son of Abraham, through Hagar, Sarah's Egyptian servant. Here is the list of their names and clans of Ishmael's descendants. The oldest was Nebaioth, followed by Kedar, Adbeel, Mibsa, Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hadad, Tema, Jetur, Napish, and Kedma. These 12 sons of Ishmael became the founders of the 12 tribes named after them, listed according to the places they settled and camped. Ishmael lived for 137 years and breathed his last and joined his ancestors in death. Ishmael's descendants occupied the region from Havilah to Shur, which is east of Egypt in the direction of Asher. There they lived in open hostility towards all their relatives. This is the account of the family of Isaac, son of Abraham. When Isaac was 40 years old, he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Arminian from Padan-Aram, and the sister of Laban the Arminian. Isaac pleaded with the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was unable to have children. So the Lord answered Isaac's prayer, and Rebekah became pregnant with twins, but the two children struggled with each other in her womb. So she went to ask the Lord about it. "Why is this happening to me?" she asked. And the Lord told her, "The sons in your womb will become two nations. From the very beginning, the two nations will be rivals. One nation will be stronger than the other, and your older son will serve as your younger son." And when the time came to give birth, Rebekah discovered that she did indeed have twins. The first one was very red at birth and covered with thick hair like a fur coat, so they named him Esau. The other twin was born with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so they named him Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when the twins were born. As the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter. He was an outdoorsman, but Jacob had a quiet temperament, preferring to stay at home. Isaac loved Esau because he enjoyed eating the wild game Esau brought home. But Rebekah loved Jacob. One day when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau arrived home from the wilderness exhausted and hungry. Esau said to Jacob, "I am starved. Give me some of that red stew." This is how Esau got his other name, Edom, which means red. "All right," Jacob replied, "but trade me your rights as firstborn." "Look, I am dying of starvation," said Esau. "What good is my birthright to me now?" But Jacob said, "First, you must swear your birthright is mine." So Esau swore an oath, thereby selling his rights as firstborn to his brother Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and lentil stew. Esau ate the meal and got up and left. He showed contempt for his rights as the firstborn. And that is chapter 25. And there, that's a lot shorter chapter, but there's still a lot in there.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that I noticed up here at the top, it says, because you have the whole Muslim religion and the Christian Jewish religion over Isaac and Esau, or not Isaac, Ishmael. And Esau, Ishmael, right? And here it says, before he died, he gave gifts to his sons. Or he gave everything to Isaac. So that would be his whole blessing and everything. And which I don't know what the Quran says, because I know they have somewhat of the first five books also, if I remember right. But I just found that interesting. That could be a possible talking point if you was speaking with a Muslim person to.
Well, it shows right away. It says they lived there in open hostility towards their relatives.
And they still do.
Yeah, that is, it's been foretold. I mean, that was foretold from the get-go. But I want to go back and show you right here again. And we talked about this earlier. Abraham and Sarah, because I'm not putting the full blame on Sarah. But when Hagar, Sarah's like, take my servant Hagar, you know, have a son with her so that you have a lineage. You know, God's already promised that they're going to have a son. But Sarah's like, well, obviously it's not going to be from me. I'm like 90. So why don't you take Hagar and have a son? And he does. And so Abraham, being a man's like, sure. You know, I mean, that's pretty much, I can't see it much other way. If you're a guy, it's just like, he's sitting there saying, oh, you're telling me to have another woman too?
I'll pass.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I think he is more like, honey, are you sure? Wink, wink.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is right. Wink, wink.
It's just so we can have some children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take this one for the team.
Yep.
So if you think about it, though, it's you know, what happens is, and what he shouldn't have done and what they shouldn't have done, is they both went outside what God had planned. They tried to take it into their own hands. That simple thing, that very simple thing, is where this entire war in our world is going on today, is still from that one sin. The hatred, the 12 tribes of Ishmael and the 12 tribes of Israel still hate each other. That there's still always war. There's been war since this time over there. It has not stopped. You'll have a couple days where it's like, ah, it's peaceful, but over here, somebody's still shooting. Over here, somebody's still shooting. But there's always war in the Middle East. There always is war. There's perpetual war.
That's why they won't stop also.
Genesis 3:15, I will put enmity between the two.
So we see... But we see that right away. I think that, you know, it's just it just shows you cannot take what God's plans are into your own hands. You know, you have to have faith. If God tells you something, God means it. God's going to make it happen. God could literally have just given them a rock and said, here's a baby. And by the time they looked down, it was a baby. It just could have happened that way. Right. So, and Abraham's had a lot of faith up to this point. Well, I guess he had more faith a little bit after, because like when we talked about it last time, with Isaac, when he went to sacrifice Isaac under God's instruction, he didn't question him. He just went to do it. This is the same son that he was so worried about he hadn't had, that they had to go and try to make one themselves, right? But he believed, and we talked about this too, he believed just like David believed. David's like, well, I haven't been king yet, so I know Goliath isn't going to kill me because God's already told me I'm going to be king. So, you know, he's sitting there like Abraham's like, well, Isaac's already going to be the descendant. You know, he's going to be the father of many nations through me. You know, it's going to be him. So God can't actually kill him here. And if you actually go to Hebrews 11, it tells you that Abraham's full intent said that he knew that if he killed Isaac, God would bring him back from the dead. Hebrews 11 tells us that. So he, in a sense, he did bring him back from the dead, because he was a blood sacrifice at that moment, laying on that altar. And also, Isaac most likely was not a 12, 14 year old kid. He was most likely 20s or 30s, and he was a willing participant in this, saying, hey, this is what God wants. Like, you know, a 100-year-old man's not going to overpower him. So Abraham had faith. Abraham had faith, but we still struggle with certain things. You know, when we take things into our own hands, things often go the opposite direction of what we anticipate. And that's where things get shady in the Bible. And we see that even more next chapter. We'll talk about it more, but it's another funny thing because you see Isaac with Abimelech doing the same thing that Abraham did with Abimelech, which is also funny because Abimelech was just a dynastic name that they would give the kings of the Philistines that were in Gerar, because the military commander was always named Nicol, N-I-C-O-L. The guy was 70 years apart. The guys had the same names.
Hmm.
So it's a name that's given to the commander of the army and whoever the king is at that time. They have the same name. Abimelech is always Abimelech. Nicole is always Nicole. It's just the way it worked. But I'm sorry, we're really reverting here.
Okay.
Almost like more of a title than an actual
it is.
Name,
it is like a title, yeah. But it's kind of like when you go in, you could look at it like the pharaohs, right? You got Ramses the first, Ramses the second, Ramses the third, Ramses the fourth. I mean, there is, you know, and then they jump in. They have all these names that this is who you're named under this dynasty or under this section of history. This is who we look to. So this is your Ramsey or your Seti or your Thutmose or your all these different, you know, different kings. There was always, almost always, more than one in each line of that name. But they would either call them what the first one usually, you know, it'd be like Herod the Great. But like there was also Herod the Second, you know, there's more than one Herod. Actually, Herod Agrippa, who was the Herod that or Agrippa, King Agrippa that Paul talked to in Acts before he's killed, was actually the son or no grandson. He was the grandson of Herod the Great, who was the one that had all the babies executed when Jesus was born. So you see the full thing come full circle. It's just so cool when you see how all the pieces kind of fit back together. But anyway, just kind of cool. So we get to the birth of Jacob and Esau. And one comes out red and furry.
Covered in hair from head to toe like a hairy cloak. Sounds pretty squatchy to me.
It's squatchy.
Yeah. And, of course, a lot of people are familiar with that story. And even maybe the people that's read my book kind of knows my point on that. But I was wanting to read from Lewis Ginsburg, Legends of the Jews, a little excerpt just to show you know, whether this is true or not. This was a story. This was an oral legend. This was something that they knew, recited, and believed. And it kind of gives more context. And I think we've talked about it several times in the show, like Genesis 6. You get this little blurb about this really big, important event because they didn't want to theoretically beat a dead horse. They're like, everybody knows about that. I don't have to go into detail about that. Everybody knows. We got plenty of stories. We got plenty of scrolls. We got the scroll of Enoch, you know, so that's a thing. Even with Esau, you only get a little bit about him because there's so many other scrolls and stories. So they're not thinking of us thousands of years later reading it. They're thinking about the people there and at that time that already know all this stuff. So I think it's really important to read this stuff. But it says in here in the Legends of the Jews, talking about the pregnancy, when she became pregnant, it said she suffered torturous pain because her twin sons began their lifelong quarrels in her womb. They strove to kill each other. If Rebekah walked in the vicinity of a temple erected to idols, Esau moved in her body. And if she passed a synagogue or a Beth Ha Midrash, Jacob essayed, whatever that means, to break forth from her womb. The quarrels of the children turned upon such differences as these. Esau would incite that there was no life except the earthly life of material pleasures. And Jacob would reply, "My brother, there are two worlds before us, this world and the world to come. In this world, men eat and drink and traffic and marry and bring up sons and daughters. But all this does not take place in the world to come. If it please thee, do thou take this world, and I will take the other. Esau had Samael as his ally. And for those that's not familiar, that is the, according to the Jewish beliefs, is this was the name of the Nakash before the fall, Satan, Samael. So it says, Esau had Samael as his ally, who desired to slay Jacob in his mother's womb. But the archangel Michael hastened to Jacob's aid. He tried to burn Samael, and the Lord saw it was necessary to constitute a heavenly court for the purpose of arbitrating the case of Michael and Samael. Even the quarrel between the two brothers regarding the birthright had its beginning before they emerged from the womb of their mother. Each desired to be the first to come into the world. It was only when Esau threatened to carry his point at the expense of his mother's life that Jacob gave way. Rebekah asked other women whether they too had suffered such pain during their pregnancy. And when they told her, they had not heard of a case like hers, except for the pregnancy of Nimrod's mother. So I think that's, you know, pretty insightful. They're saying that Satan is the guardian angel and protector and overseer of Esau. He comes out red, covered in hair. They're fighting in the womb, tries to kill Jacob, and then even threatens to internally, like, you know, because so many women died during the birthing process during this time. So it's saying that Esau was even telling Jacob in the womb, you know, you don't let me come out first, I'll kill her. So to save his mother's life, according to the story, you know, Jacob let Esau be born first and get the birthright. So it all goes back to Genesis 3:15, guys. Says, I will put enmity between her seed and thy seed. You know, the angel of the Lord said, there's two nations, two peoples in your womb. One comes out totally different. They're fighting in the womb. Esau's foot pushing on Jacob's head, possibly bruising the head to exit the womb. Jacob clutching the heel, bruising the heel. To me, it's a Polaroid picture of Genesis 3:15. And the people of this time, I think that would have been the first thing that popped into their head, because we're just a few chapters. And with, of course, they didn't have chapters back then, but it's just a little short ways down the scroll from Genesis 3:15, this event happened. So it's like a callback.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Going on to your point, you know, when we look at the biblical side, because I love, and this is something where there's a lot of contention with the church as a whole about extra biblical texts, right? When they talk about whether it's the book of Enoch, whether it's, like you said, Legends of the Jews, you can go through it, but you can see plainly. I've been reading Joshua lately. That's been the book I've been in the most recently. And it goes in and talks about all these books about the acts of the kings of the Jews and the acts of the or Israelites, whatever it is. But there's all these different books. It says, this was recorded in this book. This was recorded in this book. It's not in the Bible, but it's in a historical book. Now, I'm not saying you should go out there and read everything and just believe it as face value. We always test everything against scripture. Always. Scripture always supersedes. But these people reference these different books, these different things, these different different writings And we have to test it against the Bible. We have to. But they had history books the same way we do. Just because you weren't at World War One doesn't mean it didn't happen. You know, just because the World War One isn't in the Bible, it didn't happen. Just because the Maccabees aren't in the Bible doesn't mean the Maccabees didn't exist. I mean, you go back in time, like there's so many things that happen and are referenced in the Bible that people of the time would have known. Paul's writing this and he's like, you would, I mean, this is going on right now. You would know this. I don't need to talk about it. It's in all the tabloids right now.
This is trending on Instagram, guys. Exactly. Under a rock.
I know this is on Rockbook or whatever, you know, who knows, but it's the thing is you have to know that this isn't all. If everything that ever happened was in the Bible, you'd never be able to read it all because it would be pages and pages and pages that would fill up your house and your neighbor's house and the house next to it. And you would never be able to get through it all. Because there's so much that happened. We're given what we need. We don't need more than the Bible. We don't. But if we want to keep digging, you know, we're given so many things. I always ask this as a question when we talk about these things, these books. How did Peter die? He's crucified upside down. How did Paul die? Well, he's beheaded. Does your Bible tell you that? No, it doesn't. But we teach it in church. Where does it come from? Well, actually, those two deaths are cited in over 30 different sources, not biblical sources. Why is Peter crucified upside down? He said, I'm not worthy to be killed the same way Christ was. Turn me upside down. Why was Paul beheaded? Well, he's a Roman citizen. You're not allowed to crucify a Roman citizen. Right? If you listen to the historian Jerome, he says it was actually in the ninth year of Nero's reign that they were killed on the same day, those two, Peter and Paul. But it's not in the Bible, so it must not have happened. Right. So we have to look at this and have to understand. You have to have discernment. You have to look at these things and always go back to Scripture. But we can't sit there and pretend that there isn't more truth out there as far as different stories that have happened, things that have happened, you know, whether it's stuff in the Apocrypha or whatever it is. I love Belle and the Dragons, one of my favorite stories in the Apocrypha about Daniel and Cyrus. Such a cool story. We know Daniel and Cyrus knew each other. Is that story true? I can't tell you for sure. I'm not going to sit there and say that supersedes the Bible because I'm just not going to tell you that. It doesn't. But it's a cool story that lends credence to who Daniel was, lends credence to who Cyrus was, and shows you more truth that the Bible, the people that it's talking about, were there because the Bible tells us they were there. So it doesn't hurt my belief in the Bible. It shows me and strengthens my faith.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you bring these things up, when you bring Lewis Ginsburg, or we can talk about Rashi, or we can talk about Jubilees, or we can talk about the Book of Maccabees, or we can talk about the Book of Enoch. I'm not saying you have to believe them. You don't have that. It's a non-salvation issue, but they help fill in the holes of the history. And take it at face value. You can look at it and say, hey, yeah, maybe they took some artistic liberties on things, saying, you know, giants were 3,000 ells tall, which would be, you know, a little over half a mile. So that's pretty high. But when you look at what it says and the description of what it does, because in 8 verses, the world goes from, sons of God coming down and having intercourse with the daughters of men, and 8 verses later, everybody has to be killed. That's a lot to happen in 8 verses. So if you don't,
there's a lot more that happened.
There's a lot more that got us there. So if you look at the Book of Enoch, I think that gives us a picture of a potential thing that happened at that point. I'm not saying you have to believe it. You don't. It doesn't matter salvation-wise at all. But when we like to dig into these things, and that's been the whole point of this podcast, is to go past just the milk, right? We're not trying to just drink the milk. We're trying to be meat and potatoes. We want to get deep as we can. And that means that we're going to look at all of our resources. So Bible always is number one, but you have to look at these other resources.
Yep.
I think I had a point to make and I totally went past it, but anyway.
Mm-hmm. just keep, I'll mention a couple of other little things that's in here that stood out to me. But going on down, it said two nations, they are each owning a world of its own. The one, the Torah, the other, sin. From the one will spring Solomon, the builder of the temple. From the other, Vespian, the destroyer thereof. And go on down. It says that Jacob was born clean and sweet of body. Esau was brought forth with hair, a beard, and teeth, both front and back. And he was blood red, a sign of his future sanguinary nature, whatever that word means. But they compare him again to Ishmael, because it says, on the account of his ruddy appearance, he remained uncircumcised. Isaac, his father, feared that due to his condition, he hesitated to perform the circumcision. He decided to wait until Esau should attain his 13th year, at the age Ishmael had received the sign of the covenant. But when Esau grew up, he refused to give heed to his father's wish, and so he was left uncircumcised. The opposite of his brother in all this, as in all respects, Jacob was born with the sign of the covenant upon his body, a rare distinction. But Esau also bore a mark upon him at birth, the figure of a serpent, the symbol of all that is wicked and hated of God. And that's why in our canon, it talks about Jacob I love, but Esau I hated. That's pretty strong words.
Pretty strong words. So as we go a little further, we see the birthright thing, right? And this is something that everybody's heard. Everybody's heard the story of him selling his birthright for a bowl of soup. And most people look at Esau saying, that's pretty impulsive. He's in the here and now. He's thinking just about this moment. He's not looking, you know, he doesn't look towards the future or what that means. But as we look at the book of Jasher, which is, now there's a lot of contention about Jasher because it's said to have been, you know, the one that's cited in the Bible is said to have been lost over time and then refound in like the 9th century or rewritten in the 9th century and then lost and then found again in like the 18th century and rewritten again. So there's people that say that, you know, Jasher itself is not what the Bible cites as Jasher, which it may not be. I don't know. But what I'll tell you is that it does give us a pretty good, and it could have been just one of those stories that's passed down, but it gives us a pretty good reason for why Esau would be so impulsive with his birthright. And I know, Justin, this is one of your passions, so I'm going to let you hit on that too. I do think it's fascinating, but and it adds, there's so much depth to this story, because if you go with Nimrod, you can go into so many different directions, and it just keeps going. It doesn't stop. But, dude, and actually, cool part about this, if you think about it, why is Jacob making a stew, and why is it so specific to that? I think you sit there, and it talks about how his father was so loved the game that Esau brought. What Esau brought him to eat, he was happy for. So maybe Jacob's actually trying to win over his dad by making him something he can eat, even though it's some kind of vegetarian crap I wouldn't eat. But he's bringing him something. He's trying to impress his dad with this stew. But when Esau comes, he sees his opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And the Jewish context, too, is that was the mourner's meal. This said that earlier at the beginning of the chapter, this was around the death of Abraham. So Isaac's father just passed, and according to some other writings and stuff, that when a father would die, someone would, his eldest son would make the mourner's meal, and this was the red lentil stew. So Esau was out gallivanting around doing whatever while his younger brother, Jacob, was performing his duties. He was preparing the mourner's meal for his father. And some people talk about that, and that's why Jacob was upset and was like, oh, just go ahead and just trade me the birthright because you're not fulfilling your duties that you're supposed to be doing anyway. I'm here doing it. I'm taking care of Dad. But, yeah, that trading of the birthright, that never made sense to me. It's your father's Donald Trump in the modern context. You're the eldest son. You're going to get the billions of dollars. You're going to get all the companies. You're going to get all the real estate. I mean, you are the prince. You're next in line to be king, man. And you're going to trade it for a bag of Doritos. You can come in, your younger brother eating a bag of Doritos, and he's like, yeah, I'll give you the Doritos, but sign over the company and all the money and all the assets. Sure. What use is all that stuff to me when I'm dead? And you're like, what? So like you said, when you go into the book of Jasher, it says that, and just once again, I read earlier that when Rebecca was asking, you know, has any other women had this much complications and pain and travail and labor and caring of a child? They said the only time they ever heard of this was with the birth of Nimrod. So they're aligning him and comparing him, stacking him against Nimrod. Like he's an equal, he's a counterpart to or alike. And both of them had the title of the Mighty Hunter, the Gibborim Hunter. So the book of Jasher says that Nimrod built up jealousy and hatred all of his days against Esau. So it's kind of like a Highlander situation. There can only be one mighty man. I'm going to show you who the real mighty hunter is. And it says that basically the way it words it is Nimrod goes out with the hunting party and is hunting this beast of a man, this man covered in hair, Esau. But it says that Esau sees him coming, hides himself, jumps out, cuts off Nimrod's head, battles two of the Gibborim king's guards. So he kills three giants single-handedly in combat. And it says that he takes the time to steal Nimrod's garments. And it says these garments is the reason that he was able to prevail over all the nations. And the other guards that were in earshot heard all the commotion, took off running after him. So he takes the garments and runs home. And it says that he goes into his tent, he hides these garments, and then goes into his brother's tent. And there's where it picks up and dovetails off with Genesis. And that makes perfect sense. He's like, you know, help me, brother, save me, hide me, you know, sew up my wounds here. And Jacob's like, yeah, I'll do that if you, but you're going to give me everything. You're going to owe me big time, bro. And he was desperate, man. And I think that fits perfectly with the story and his response, because Esau says, what use is a birthright to me when I'm dead? Take it. So once again, it's if it's right, if it's wrong, if it's indifferent, if it's an embellishment, either or, that's irrelevant. But what is relevant is that was the stories being passed down of the people of that time. That's what they believed. And I believe that's why, once again, you get this little blurb about it and keeps moving forward, because you get the highlights here. Because if you want to watch the whole game, you know, you can flip over to ESPN and watch the full game. So they had the book of Jasher and all these other stories. That was the full game. You know, so when we're reading the Bible and all these stories, that's like the ESPN highlight reel. You're getting the high notes and the important stuff, but you're not getting the full basketball game, you know?
No, I agree. I just think it's interesting. I think that's why it's important that we dig into these things so much. I know I've already went over that, but you can't ex-nay all those extra biblical sources when you still use them for other things. When you use, you know, we can look at Josephus a lot, look at Eusebius, you look at Herodotus, Augustine. I mean, there's all these things that are, you know, the Targums, you know, all these different things that we pull stuff from
and complement the word
that I think are the other part of the story. Once again, not something you need for salvation. I can't say that enough, because that's where people struggle. People get like, you're taking something that's not the Bible. No, Bible's always first. But look at these things, compare them to the Bible, and make up your decision for yourself. This is where you need to be in the Word. You need to be in the Bible so that you're not tricked by something else. That you're not, you know, there are false texts out there. You've talked about the Gnostic Gospels and things of this nature where there's false texts out there. There's texts that are very...
And those are clear, you know what I mean? Because if you have discernment, you know the Bible, you read that, it's like, that's a complete opposite.
Yeah.
And makes a lot of other stuff in the Bible not make sense, or makes the Bible lying if we believe this. And that's why that's kind of like my discernment. Like you said, that's the Bible is
the key,
the standard. Cipher. Yes. So it's like when I read these stories, if it aligns with the Bible, doesn't contradict it, and fills in gaps and gives us more information on certain things that are vague in the Bible, I'll keep it. But have I stumbled across some stuff in some of these books that's like, that don't make sense. That don't sound right. You know, that's to me, that's the Holy Spirit. That's why it says you need no teacher. You have the Holy Spirit. So you read these texts and you pray for discernment, and your spirit will speak to you. It'll tell you, you know, hey, there's maybe something here. No, or red flag. No, throw that out. You know what I mean? So that's how I do it. You know, you pray for discernment, you read these things, and the stuff that's real and fits in perfectly, you're going to know it if you know your Word. And the stuff that doesn't, it's going to stand out like a sore thumb. It's going to be out of place. It's going to contradict the Bible. And that's how you know, man. The Holy Spirit will tell you.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, everybody out there, I hope you're enjoying us breaking down Genesis, going through the Word. I feel compelled to keep driving through and trying to learn as much as I can myself. But I think that's sometimes a calling, right? Is to share these things with as many people as we possibly can. That's what's there. It's trying to make sense of the things that when you read it, you're like, ah. But that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to dig in deep. We're trying to look at the Word. We're trying to look at all the different resources that are out there, test them against the Bible, and kind of see what sticks, see where the truth is. And I hope you guys will do that along with us. So as always,
keep digging, baby.